Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
We are an inclusive faith community
seeking to live out the loving, just, and generous way of Jesus.
We are participants in a long tradition
that's less concerned with doctrines and dogma that demand total agreement,
but a life to be lived, enjoyed, and given away to others.
What unites us is a growing awareness that life is precious,
that we are made by love in order to love.
This community is comprised of and affirms the entire human family,
regardless of race, age, creed,
physical abilities, marital or economic status,
gender identity, or sexual orientation.
So, if you are curious and have come to see,
if you are tired and have come to rest,
if you are grateful and have come to share,
if you are wounded and have come to heal,
if you are joyful and have come to celebrate,
if you are uprooted and have come to belong,
welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Hello, Crosspoint. I'm happy to be back with you today, and I want to share a little bit about my journey as we talk about the subject of the divine feminine. Lately, I've been reflecting on my upbringing. An upbringing that was in the conservative evangelical church. Maybe some of you can relate. I have been considering how that church culture might have shaped me, wondered how my view of God and myself may have been distorted by its teachings. There are many truths I have unearthed and more that I need to explore. But at the heart of it all, I found a pervasive lie. A distortion of reality that has been so thoroughly woven into church theology and practice that we may never be able to fully disentangle ourselves from its destructive thread. That lie is that God is a man. Church structures support the lie. Many are thoroughly patriarchal and hierarchical, with men standing in for God at the head of most major churches, even the ones that claim to support women in ministry and gender equality. Let me give you a specific example. I do some work with the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship, also known as CBF, a group that left the Southern Baptist Convention after the fundamentalist takeover in the 1990s. One of CBF's key values is that women are gifted for ministry and that church leadership should not be limited to men. However, a recent study showed that only 7% of CBF churches have a woman in the senior pastor position. After 30 years of supporting women and egalitarianism, they have less than 10% of their congregations that are ready for a female pastor who is a senior pastor. The patriarchal idea that men are more fit for church leadership is challenging to counteract in our culture, no matter how many strides we have made toward equality. As the feminist theologian Mary Daly once said, "When God is male, then male is God." It is not only structures that support the lie that God is male. Our language perpetuates that lie as well. The vast majority of Christians use exclusively masculine language for God. Titles like Father, King, Lord all fill the prayers and songs of Christian people. And of course, our God language is often limited to masculine pronouns. He, his, him. We should not underestimate the power of words. They can be powerful forces, like waves that crash against rocky cliffs, carving out their shape over the years. The words we use shape our reality. So what type of reality have we created with the language we use about God? Does calling God by masculine names exalt the masculine in our society, in our churches, in our homes? It is certainly something to think about, especially as we endure a time in our country's history when women are losing rights rather than gaining them. When women continue to be underrepresented in the leadership structures of government, business, and religion. With America doubling down on the divine masculine in its structures, its cultures, its language, how can we even begin to think of God and humanity differently? What steps can we take to understand and embrace a God who is also feminine? I have been trying to combat the lie of the male God for over a decade now. And I started by adjusting my language, trying to use inclusive language for God and humanity. Then I began to read the Bible through the eyes of women. This helped me recognize where Scripture is at its most patriarchal, but also where the stories and perspectives of women shine through and point to a different kind of people of God. One where there is neither Jew nor Greek, neither slave nor free, not male and female. So I cognitively know that God is not male, that God is spirit, and God is love. And that we humans, male and female and the whole spectrum, are made in God's image. But those ideas, however strongly they have taken root in my brain, do not change my past or the patterns that were established in my evangelical upbringing. So I decided I needed to make a spiritual life map and revisit the main themes of my faith journey. As Martin Luther King Jr. said, sometimes you have to go backward to go forward. A life map helps a person go back. It is something that I make my students in my formation classes do. Making a life map involves reflecting on key moments, events, or patterns in your life and looking back at how you felt at those moments and why. Reinterpreting these key events helps people understand themselves, their influences, and their emotional development better. I figured that if I made a map of my spiritual journey, re-examining key events with my current view, I might be able to feel and understand God's character and presence in a new way. I might even be able to identify and uproot those destructive convictions that keep God male in my own mind. The first event that I reflected on was actually one of my earliest memories as a child. Picture this. A 5-year-old, me, kneeling by my bed late one night, crying and praying that Jesus would forgive me for my sins and come into my heart. My family was stationed in Honolulu, Hawaii, and that morning, my kindergarten Sunday school teacher at the Baptist Mission had given us a rundown of the Romans Road. If you're not familiar with the Romans Road, it's basically a narrow, very prescribed way of describing salvation that revolves around guilt and confession. Well, this articulation of the gospel greatly affected me as a kindergartner, and when I had time to myself, I prayed the sinner's prayer, as they call it. As I processed that event, the moment that evangelicals would call my conversion, I came to understand the contradictions in it. On the one hand, the version of the gospel presented to me was a warped one. It was destructive, individualistic, and manipulative. Should a 5-year-old be made to feel so guilty for her sinful nature that she cries into her pillow? Absolutely not. On the other hand, the gospel I heard, however distorted it was, changed something in me. It opened me up to experiencing God at a time that I desperately needed it. One background fact that you need to know before I move on to the next event in my life map is that I was a fearful child. Fear is the main emotion I can pinpoint now when I think back on my childhood. And I don't think that is uncommon with children. There's so much in the world that we don't understand when we are young, so much uncertainty that surrounds our experience of adolescence. Just because fear is common, though, that does not make it any less significant. The most intense fear I experienced growing up came to me at night. I had constant nightmares as a child. And although I tried everything I could to calm myself down when I woke up from one of those frightening dreams, nothing really gave me peace. That is, until I was introduced to Jesus in the presence of God. After that, I went to God for comfort. I prayed for courage and strength, for peace and comfort every night. And you know what? Every night, I felt it. I poured out my fears and my concerns to God, and those sacred conversations became my safe place. The love and support I felt when I prayed was like a tangible presence that surrounded me. God showed up in a way that was very different from the toxic gospel message I had initially received. I experienced God not as an angry judge ready to condemn my pre-adolescent sin, but as a loving parent, a nurturing mother, comforting me in the midst of my fear. It makes sense then that the church would also serve as a parent to me. This is not one event on my life map, but a series of events that indelibly shaped me. Throughout my adolescence, I went to every single Southern Baptist activity possible. I sang in choirs. I went to Bible studies and discipleship weekends and mission trips. I cannot tell you how many cringy sermons and youth talks I sat through. I call them cringy because the whole time I was being raised by the church, I maintained my own connection to God through prayer, and I read the Bible for myself. I was a big reader of literature as a teenager, so when I picked up the Bible, it was natural to apply literary methods to it. And because I read the biblical text closely, I noticed when preachers and youth ministers taught concepts that did not gel with the Bible. I also noticed that the way pastors showed up in the world did not always follow the way Jesus lived his life. They seemed preoccupied with power, control, and authority, while Jesus had been concerned with humility, self-giving love, and serving the marginalized. In fact, when I thought about the people whose lives fell in line with Jesus' ministry, it was the women from church who displayed God's love most. They are the ones who impacted me for the better. Though these women never spoke from the pulpit, that was not allowed, they worked behind the scenes. They taught the love of God to kids in Sunday school. They did the work of justice in our communities. I definitely experienced God in my years growing up in the church. But it wasn't through the male pastors who butchered the Bible in their sermons and acted more like the crucifiers than the crucified. No, I experienced God in the work and witness of women. The irony of this reality is that evangelical churches claim to be biblical in their theology and practices, but the most biblical part of my church life came from the unofficial presence of women in ministry. Something evangelicals continue to oppose. Eventually, I decided I wanted to become one of those women in ministry, offering the love and presence of God to those who needed it most. This event is what you might describe as my call to ministry. But as a Baptist in Texas, it was a difficult call to decipher, and even harder to follow. At Baylor University, when I announced that I would go to seminary, many of my fellow students tried to convince me that I had heard God wrong. Women shouldn't train to be pastors, they said. If they can't be the head of the household, then they surely can't be the head of a congregation. I couldn't explain to them at the time the multitude of reasons why they were wrong, but I knew I needed to get to the point where I could. And here is where my experience of God became as tangible as it was when I was that scared, lonely girl in Hawaii. As much as I had tried to resist it, the church had shaped me into a submissive, uncertain, conflict-avoidant young woman. evangelical churches tend to churn women like this out so they can maintain the patriarchal status quo. But during college, a fire was lit in me that no conservative Baptist could quench. My determination to go to seminary doubled against the opposition, despite the fact that such subversion went against my upbringing. That determination, I believe, was the empowering, tangible presence of God urging me to follow my calling. So, I did that for a while. I studied on the graduate level, and I served in Southern Baptist churches as, wait for it, children's director and assistant youth minister, the only positions that were open to me there. As soon as I realized that the stained glass ceilings of Texas Baptist churches were indestructible, I decided to move to California and get my PhD in New Testament. It was easier to pursue an academic career as a woman than it was to try to become a pastor as a woman. Let me repeat that to you so you don't miss it. It was easier to get a PhD than become a woman pastor. Through my years of study, my understanding of the character of God grew. I immersed myself in the social and historical background of Jesus' life and ministry and looked through the illuminating eyes of interpreters from the margins. These perspectives, feminist and womanist interpreters, mujerista voices, and disability scholars, began to mediate God's presence and character to me, and they continue to do so even today. An incredibly significant event happened while I was getting my PhD. Well, three events, really. I gave birth to three babies, each at different stages of my dissertation writing. And through the process of growing human life inside of me and feeding those babies with my own body, I came to understand the divine in a way that surpasses anything I knew before. As a mother, I participated in the vocation of God, creating and nurturing and sacrificing my very self for these little humans I loved so much. Through pregnancy and breastfeeding, I realized that it is the core nature of God and of humanity to bring forth life and sustain that life with comforting presence and love. And I realized something else. Parental love is the kind that encourages and comforts. It does not condemn or harm. One of the greatest privileges of my life has been to be partners with my husband, Carrie, in raising our sons. Carrie and I want to empower our kids and help them grasp how strong and permanent our love for them is. We accept them as they are and support them in what they do. As I experience parenting, I began to see God more clearly as a loving mother who births us and nurtures us, who wants us to flourish and find joy. And yet the God that evangelicalism introduced to me as a young girl, the one that's represented in pulpits across America by pastors in power, is not a supportive, loving parent. The God portrayed in that section of Christianity is authoritatively masculine. That God uses control and guilt instead of acceptance and mercy. That God is a dysfunctional parent, a mockery of the true divine. The true God is that mothering God with whom I co-created and from whom I learned love. The true God is the divine mother who comforted me after my childhood nightmares, who answered my anxious prayers with peace and presence. The true God is those women at church who became the hands and feet of Jesus, ministers who would never be recognized as such, who would hold the hands of the hurting, but would never hold the title of pastor. The true God was that fierce sister spirit that gave me the strength to subvert the Southern Baptist system and go to seminary. The true God I have experienced throughout my life is feminine, a mother's presence, a sister spirit, a community of women mediating divine love to the church. Although there are many people who might say my experience of God as feminine is subjective at best, heretical at worst, I think you'll find it is more biblical than a male God who demands the sacrifice of his son, then abandons him at his hour of need. It is no accident that the gospel writers narrate the importance of women at the cradle, the cross, and the tomb. Women are the divine presence for Jesus at his most sacred moments. John the Baptist and the apostles might get top billing, but it is the women who mediate God's love and presence to him. When Mary gives birth to him, nurses him, and raises him, she is the life-giving God who nurtures. When the women from Luke support Jesus' ministry, they are the God who provides. When his mother and women disciples stand vigil at the cross, they are the God who has not forsaken Jesus, but who remains. When Mary Magdalene comes to the empty tomb, she is the God of persistent presence, meeting the risen Jesus where he is and taking his resurrection light to the world. Yes, we come to know the character of God through the person and teachings of Jesus. But we also see God in the women who surround Jesus with their presence. A divine balance, one might call it. I want to extend an invitation to you. Not the kind of invitation we evangelicals, ex-evangelicals, experienced with loud prayers and persuasive calls to the altar. I invite you simply to seek the divine in the feminine. The Bible has been written and translated and commented on and preached by men for most of history. And so many people have experienced God exclusively as masculine. We must change this. We must speak about how mothers participate in the sacred task of creation. We must apply the insights of women scholars and share them with others. We must raise women's voices, ordain more women pastors, use feminine language for God regularly. This last task, balancing out the language we use for God, is a small but powerful step towards change, something we can all do in our everyday practices. If you pray, you can try praying, "Dear Heavenly Mother." Or if you're not ready for that, you can pray to your loving parent. You can make the effort to use feminine pronouns for God. Some people start by using the pronoun she for the Holy Spirit, but you could also use she when you talk about God in general. Other people use a plural pronoun for God, they, which I think is clever theologically because Christians confess a triune God, three in one. Whatever language you choose to change, no matter how small a change it may seem, is a step in the right direction. Using feminine language for God helps us broaden our understanding of the nature and character of God, and it opens us up to experience and share more of God. Lastly, I invite you to do your own spiritual life map, to revisit key moments in your spiritual journey. When I did that, I discovered that even though the structures and culture and language that I grew up with portrayed God as male, I experienced God's presence much more intimately in the feminine, both the feminine in me and the feminine around me. I imagine that when you trace how God has showed up for you, you too will find that you have experienced the divine feminine. You may not have been in an environment to recognize it, and you may not have had the words to express it, but hopefully you can feel free to do that now. May God, our Heavenly Mother, give you the wisdom and strength to embrace the divine feminine, and in doing so, contribute to the flourishing of women in our churches, our society, and our world. Amen.
If you would like to know more or get connected to Crosspoint, go to crosspoint.org. If you're in need of care or assistance, go to crosspoint.org/care. And welcome home.